WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. This is the story of an artist and his dog, or dogs. William Wegman is a photographer, video artist, and painter who is best known for his pictures of his pet dog, Man Ray, named, of course, after the artist Man Ray. The dog Man Ray has been immortalized in Wegman's photographs, disguised as a dinosaur, wrapped in yarn, in a classic profile, and in dozens of other inventive poses. Man Ray died in 1982, and for the past few years, Wegman has been working with his pet dog, Fay Ray. Wegman's work comments on classic art and contemporary popular culture. His art has been shown in museums around the world. There's a new retrospective book of his work published by Abrams. I asked William Wegman if he bought his pet dog Man Ray with the idea of using him as a model.
Not really. He did enter in quite quickly because I'd just started to do photography. And getting the new puppy and the new camera. I actually just moved to California from Wisconsin.
So what was the first time you used the dog?
Probably the first day I got him, when he was 7 weeks old in Long Beach, California in 1970.
And what was the photograph?
The photograph was a sock and a dog on the bed, and they both looked alike. So I first photographed him just as another thing around the house. And since he was sleeping so much, I'd plant things on him, for instance, alligators and stuffed squirrels, just props, things like that.
Did you ever wish that Man Ray could have looked at the art and really appreciated what was happening in it and how he was being used?
I really do think of him as a collaborator with me. I know that he was really aware that we were making things, not maybe that first month, but soon afterwards. He knew that we were going here to do photographs or videotapes, and that it wasn't just like playing ball or going to the beach.
When you started doing your photography and using your dog Man Ray in the pictures, this was a period when a lot of artists were beginning to use themselves as art and themselves as the subject of their art. Did you see yourself as using Man Ray instead of yourself during that period?
I couldn't really afford assistance at the time, so I used myself and things around the house. And one of the troubling things about using yourself is, first of all, you don't really have a kind of distance to see what you look like. And it's kind of obnoxious, I think, after a while, to be putting yourself on television. Using the dog really helped to work around that basic complaint of mine.
Do you think you went through different Man Ray periods?
Definitely.
Yeah, what are the different periods?
Well, we had a blue period that lasted one day. I guess the first pictures he was used more as a space modulator. His pointing abilities and just standing still. And the later period, he was more of a character actor as he lost his great figure. I started to cover him up.
You also have posed him in some very classical poses and settings.
Mm-hmm.
Can you give an example of that?
I know that I was rather schizophrenic about how I thought of him. I wanted to keep him very noble, but I wanted to do these other things too. And I think when I turned him into a frog, he still somehow got some nobility behind that, other than when he's like this Indian chief in a canoe, which
yeah,
is rather...
Right.
It's powerful.
It's a very kind of classic American painting, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the dog's in a canoe, and there's mountains behind him, and the sky is kind of overcast, and he has a very noble look on his face, and he's wearing an Indian headdress.
Mm-hmm. And I thought that might be one of the last photographs, that I might just send him off into that body of water without a paddle and then drive back to New York. It was near the end.
Oh, this was 1981. Was he sick then?
Well, he died in 81 or 82, so about 8 months after that. And towards the end of his life, I did think that each one might be the last series of collaborations. The very last pictures are rather touching and rather personal, too. They're the close-up portraits, the big heads, you might say. Some project a kind of posthumous look to them where he looks like a Roman coin, like Julius Caesar or maybe JFK. Other times he looks... kind of like an old, worn-out pet. and rather deeply human, or deeply canine, I guess.
Were you ever worried that your sense of humor and playfulness with how you used Man Ray would be seen as too frivolous in the art world?
That's a huge question, and not a very funny one. But it's some people, when I first moved to New York, said to me quite immediately, I hate humor in art. And in a way, I agree with them. I don't like humor in art either. It's generally pointed out to be something rather trite. And I remember teachers pointing to Paul Klee and like the twittering machines as being examples of humor in art, and Alexander Calder. I think both are very fine artists, but they're not really funny like, say, a really great comic is funny. So the parallels of art and humor were a little suspect, I think.
Well, do you think of your work as having humor in it?
I think it's pretty hilarious half the time. One of my art dealers said, some of your work is funny and some of it is not so funny. And I think that's true. I mean, if it was funny, I didn't rule it out. And if it was not funny, I didn't rule it out, because that wasn't the only thing going for it.
Well, you've even had some of your work shown on the David Letterman show.
Mm-hmm.
What did that do to your prices? I'm really curious about that. Did they go up or what?
I don't think Letterman had much to do with that. I think that the early Saturday Night Live people,
oh, sure,
I was working
right.
With them. And I think that was an era where it was very exciting for artists to work, to get beyond and outside the gallery or museum or the usual art situations. It was really exciting until we achieved that, and then it was just another thing. So right now it seems to be just another thing, but in the early 70s it was a new frontier.
Was there a period in the late 60s or early 70s where you felt a lot of artists were taking themselves too seriously?
I think especially in video that became a problem, because it was hard to, no one was telling you when to turn it off, you know, just okay, enough. When you're on real TV, you have a producer and a director saying, you're off the air, or stop. But a lot of performance and video artists in the early 70s just let the machine go on too long, I think. And I hope I was really careful about that, or I was very sensitive about that.
After your dog Man Ray died, you later got another dog, a female of the same breed,
mm-hmm.
And you named her Fay Wray, and you've been using her in photographs since. Did you feel guilty at first, like you would be perceived as trying to replace Man Ray, who you were so close to?
I didn't get another dog that I worked with for 4 years after Man Ray, so it wasn't the day afterwards. And I didn't work with Fay for one whole year, because I didn't want to do that. I was especially careful not to do that. I really thought it was over. But one day I just decided to see what it felt like. And it felt great. It felt like I was really denying myself a basic pleasure and right, and that's to photograph a dog. Suddenly I realized who I was for a moment. And since then, I've photographed Fay many more times than Ray, and I've only had her 6 years. And Ray, of course, I had 12.
It seems to me you're really working with the gender differences between Man Ray and Fay Wray. You know, there's one shot of Fay Wray where she has her claws painted with red Revlon nail polish, and you've got her posed in gowns and exotic clothes.
There's a slight misunderstanding here. There was a piece called Fay Wray where I painted Man Ray's toenails red.
Oh.
But that's
well,
what
you are gender bending.
But yes, Fay is also much, she's got a whole different shape than Man Ray. I really used Man Ray at the Polaroid studio with those large format pictures when he was 9 years old. And of course, Fay was 1 year old when I first brought her there. So I was using a young, very thoroughbred looking healthy dog as opposed to an aging character actor to the studio.
You know, now that I mention it, I'm remembering that the Fay Wray, where it's a Man Ray who's posed and his claws are painted red, it's actually F-E-Y because, you know, he's Fay with the nail polish on.
That's
so
right.
I forgot about that little pun in there. I should have remembered that.
That was, in fact, the first color Polaroid I took of Man Ray, and I had never used color before, so I used it in a very self-conscious way as a black background with a gray dog and just the smallest amount of red introduced in a literal way.
Well, let me get back to the subject of gender mm-hmm. and posing your dogs. Do you feel like you're using their gender differently?
Oh, I definitely am. And I'm also using what I mentioned before is their age differently. Mm-hmm. Just, and I'm aware of having had Man Ray pass away of their mortality. So I know that a 1986 picture when Faye was very young is, can never be redone again. And that was when she had maximum flexibility. And I think right now she's looking even more feminine, but in a matriarchal way, because she had a litter of puppies. And she's filled out. She looks like a wonderful wild animal and a mother at the same time. This is a strange combination.
A few years ago, back in 1985, you started painting again.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you give up painting in the first place?
Well, in the 60s, painting was dead. You wouldn't be caught doing it. If you were making a painting, you would call it a wall piece. So I didn't want to be caught dead doing that. It was just not really there. As a young, arrogant grad student, I gave up painting in 1966 and went on to do, after wall pieces, I did floor pieces, outdoor pieces, and floating things down the river pieces, and then finally video and photography. So that was my route there.
Well, did you ever have the impulse to paint, even though it wasn't maybe so hip at the time to be doing it?
Well, I think actually when I started painting again in 85, it was more as though the type of paintings that I was doing right before I went to art school as a juvenile or as a, my 10 and 12-year-old paintings of cowboys and Indians and pirate scenes. So I was kind of skipped art education to pick up where I left off at age 12.
When you started painting again, did you feel like you had any technique left? Did you feel like you remembered how to paint?
Oh, I did in a way, but in retrospect, I didn't really. I mean, my first paintings I did, I said, hey, these are great. I really know how to do this. But by next year, I realized that I didn't. So I kind of marched through my techniques pretty quickly.
What got you involved in art in the first place?
I think I just ruled out every other thing by having such bad grades in high school, and I needed an A, and I took art. And my art teacher said, you're really talented. You should go to art school. And so I did, and it kind of really changed my life. Art was really important to me as a child, but as a teenager, I was more interested in sports and didn't see myself going to Canada to play hockey for the Canadiens, so... I took up art instead without knowing really what it was.
When your teacher told you that you were really talented, what did that mean, that you could draw a realistic-looking face or a realistic-looking street scene?
Well, probably. I can't remember exactly what I was doing, but it was probably some sort of landscape drawings and paintings. Mm-hmm. And I always did watercolors based on scenes outside my window in Western Massachusetts or... pouring through the World Book Encyclopedia, which is pretty much still my source for my paintings right now.
How are you using it now?
I just kind of browse through my 1950s World Books and find images, which I just kind of shop for images. Trains, planes, mining scenes, turnpikes, Just look through any of those encyclopedias and you'll see my paintings. But or you can go to a gallery and see them.
While we're on the subject of your images, there's one image I really want to ask you about in one of your paintings. There's two, I don't know if they're apartment buildings, but they're two several-story-high buildings, like maybe 20 stories or something. And each building is separated by a few inches. And this is from the perspective of looking down at the roof. And on one roof... there's a man with a camera.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other roof, there appears to be two people. This is all very kind of through a haze. You know, there's two people holding up third person by their arms and kind of dangling them over the edge of the roof.
Well, I saw that as a family photography session where the mother is dangling her daughter between the skyscraper and the father is taking the photograph of the child. And I didn't put in the expression, but you can assume some sort of terror look on the child's face. So it's a kind of a family how-to in photography. how to get good expressions from your children, I guess, in photography. So it is rather a sinister subject, I think.
Gee, what are you saying about photography in there?
Well, I love those books on how-to in photography, these helpful tips. So it's just taking it to some absurd place, which is what a lot of my own photographs tend to do, and drawings especially. They take a very logical scene, like I think I actually just did pluck that family group off the ground. You know, it said showed the mother tossing the child around, and instead I just relocated over between two skyscrapers, like the World Trade Center.
Some of your photographic work is with these large format Polaroids that are, how large are they?
They're 20 by 24 inches.
Mm-hmm. What are the advantages for you of working that big, working on that scale?
One advantage is just it's a standard size that I don't have to reconsider afterwards. It always comes out that size.
Mm-hmm.
It's instant. In other words, in about 70 seconds, I see what I've done on the scale that I'm going to be ultimately showing it at. So it's not a process. It's just there. And I can say, it's not there, and we have to do this, or it's there, and I can do something else.
Does it also provide instant gratification because of that?
Well, instant knowledge is what it is, to know that you're done and you can go on. And with my other photography, I use a Hasselblad 2.25 format. I have to wait a day to get the film back to know if I had it done, and by then I may not continue with it, or I may.
Right. Oh, I want to get back to your early pictures and then going to art school. I mean, your early paintings were pictures,
mm-hmm.
you know. Then you went to art school and you gave up on painting. I'm thinking about what it must have been like to turn your back on the form that got you into art in the first place.
Mm-hmm. I think things move very quickly when you're young. When you're 19, you learn something, and by 20, you've learned that it's embarrassing and passé. And by 22, you're on to something even more urgent and tremendously important. But by the time you're 40, things have a whole different pattern to them. So I was racing through art movements in my young years to establish my own credentials, to find something that was my own. And I guess I was, along with everybody else in the 60s, turning things upside down and finding new this and different that's. You know, to arrive somewhere that hadn't been so trodden over.
Well, I want to thank you a lot for talking with us about your art.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
William Wegman, a retrospective exhibition of his work, is currently touring Europe. It comes to the U.S. in 1991. A book of Wegman's work has just been published by Abrams.